On September 17, 1925, a metal handrail pierced through an 18-year-old girl's body like a sword through a bowl. Gold powder from another passenger's burst packet covered her bloodied form, prompting witnesses to cry, "La bailarina," the dancer. Frida Kahlo should have died that day. Instead, she transformed her shattered body into one of the most powerful canvases of the 20th century. Her paintings, raw, visceral, unapologetically personal, speak a visual language that transcends time and culture. Today, her face adorns everything from museum walls to coffee mugs, her unibrow and flower crowns instantly recognizable. But beneath the commercialized icon lies a woman who turned agony into art, who painted herself because she was often alone and was the subject I know best. What emerges is not just an artist's biography, but a masterclass in transmuting suffering into meaning. Before the bus accident that would define her, young Frida had already learned to transform limitation into fierce independence. At 6, polio confined her to bed for 9 months, withering her right leg and earning her the cruel nickname Pata de Palo, peg leg. Rather than accepting victimhood, she became surprisingly athletic, swimming and boxing while concealing her thinner calf with multiple socks. During confinement, she developed an extraordinary coping mechanism, breathing on her bedroom window, drawing an imaginary door with her finger, and visiting a friend in the world beyond. This creative escape would later manifest in her painting's surreal symbolism. Her father Guillermo, a German-Jewish photographer prone to epileptic seizures, recognized his own introspective nature in Frida. He called her the most intelligent of his daughters, teaching her photography while she learned to care for him during his attacks. When the bus collision shattered her spine in 3 places, fractured her pelvis, and broke her leg in 11 places, Frida lay immobilized in a plaster cast resembling a sarcophagus. From this living death, she began to paint. In 1928, Frida boldly approached Diego Rivera on his scaffolding, demanding he judge her work. The famous muralist, 42 to her 22, was captivated by their unusual energy of expression and fundamental plastic honesty. Her parents dubbed their 1929 marriage the Elephant and the Dove, referencing Diego's 300-pound frame against Frida's 98 pounds. They shared unconventional minds that rejected bourgeois morality while blending revolutionary politics with fantasy. Where Diego created panoramic murals encompassing all of society, Frida focused intimately on particular details, clothing, faces, individual lives, herself. Her subjects came from her immediate world, conveying lived experience rather than abstract theory. Their relationship was complex. Frida loved Diego obsessively, yet sometimes hated him. She despaired at his infidelities, yet claimed amusement. She mothered him while maintaining a father-daughter dynamic. Despite quarrels and cruelties, they remained primary in each other's lives, though Diego prioritized his art while Frida put him first. When Diego received U.S. mural commissions, Frida accompanied him into exile. In Detroit, while Diego painted Ford-commissioned industry murals, Frida discovered she was pregnant. On July 4, 1932, she miscarried at Henry Ford Hospital. From this trauma emerged her first masterpiece, herself naked on a hospital bed, floating in barren landscape, hemorrhaging onto sheets. 6 red ribbon-like veins connect her to symbolic objects: a male fetus, anatomical diagrams, a snail representing the miscarriage's slowness, pelvic bones, a mechanical device, and Diego's orchid. This marked her evolution from conventional portraiture to deeply personal symbolic imagery. In another work, she depicted herself on the borderline between Mexico and the United States, Mexico's side showing sun and moon in fertile landscape, America's side depicting windowless skyscrapers like tombstones and industrial chimneys like automatons. For Frida, machines represented trauma: her accident, her miscarriage in Motor City, the work stealing Diego, while Mexico represented life and human connection. Returning to Mexico in 1933, the Riveras moved into their new home, two modernist cubes connected by a bridge, his pink, hers blue. Diego's affair with Frida's sister Cristina devastated her beyond any previous infidelity. She channeled her anguish into a few small nips, depicting a murdered woman in a blood-soaked bed. Inspired by a newspaper account of a man who stabbed his lover and told the judge he'd only gave her a few small nips, Frida admitted she painted this because she felt sympathy with the murdered woman. She herself had been murdered by life. Her mordant wit pervades subsequent works, where physical wounds symbolize psychological injury. In one painting, she displays her bandaged foot and a bleeding gash on her inner thigh, candidly telling male friends the hand placement showed masturbation, yet facing the viewer unabashed. Just as the accident transformed Frida from carefree girl into determined woman, Rivera's affair changed her from adoring bride into complex, autonomous artist. Though still orbiting in Diego's glow, increasingly the light that attracted people was her own. In 1938, Edward G. Robinson purchased four paintings for $200 each, thrilling Frida. "This way, I am going to be able to be free. I'll be able to travel and do what I want without asking Diego for money." That year, André Breton visited Mexico and proclaimed her a surrealist, offering a Paris exhibition. Her response was revealing. "I never knew I was a surrealist till André Breton came to Mexico and told me I was." This positioned her as an original whose fantasy drew from Mexican tradition rather than European movements. Her New York exhibition, Julian Levy Gallery, succeeded, and in Paris, she attracted Miro, Kandinsky, and Picasso, who gifted her tortoiseshell earrings. Though labeled surrealist, Frida insisted she was a realist. Her fantasy wasn't escape into the subconscious, but a way of confronting reality. Her symbolism remained autobiographical and accessible, fundamentally different from European surrealists seeking to escape reason itself. By 1944, Frida's health had catastrophically declined. She endured 28 orthopedic corsets, one steel, three leather, the rest plaster. When one device prevented both sitting and reclining, she furiously removed it and tied herself to a chair. Her wounded self-portraits became silent cries projecting pain onto canvas. In The Little Deer, she appears with a stag's body pierced by 9 arrows, a metaphor for injuries gradually destroying her. After her gangrenous leg was amputated in 1953, she commissioned a special red leather boot for her prosthetic, adorned with bells and embroidery, twirling proudly before friends. At her first solo Mexican exhibition, she defied doctor's orders and arrived by ambulance, her hospital bed placed in the gallery's center as she sang and joked with guests. 8 days before her death on July 13, 1954, she completed her final painting, Watermelons, inscribed with Viva la Vida, Long Live Life. Frida showed us something revolutionary. Our scars can become our most powerful expression. She didn't paint despite her pain. She painted through it, transforming what could have destroyed her into art that speaks across generations.